Now, the philosophy behind mathematics, the poetry and beauty of mathematics, is not a subject we've devoted a lot of time to on LNL. Now I'm beginning to wonder why not, because every time we've discussed mathematics, it's been intriguing, but it's usually been with scientific people who take the time to explain their work to us. As lay people, they interpret for us. Well, no longer, because my next guest has just spent 6 out of 7 years writing a novel which has mathematics at its very core. It's an extraordinary attempt by a lay person to attempt to understand and capture the power and meaning and mystery of math. She not only makes us start to question the very nature of what we thought mathematics was, I never knew what mathematics was, actually, but she also helps us to see mathematics as something that touches whatever it means to be human, and I wonder whether she includes in that the nature of love. Well, let's share something of her journey into this rarefied world, and now that she's stirred herself after that little lullaby, I'm delighted to welcome Sydney writer Sue Wolfe, whose new book is called Leaning Towards Infinity, published by a joyful Random House, because it's already a bestseller, into a second big printing. So, what is mathematics?
Look, I have to tell you to start with that I'm absolutely innumerate too. I feel I should lay my cards on the table straight away about this. I mean, if you saw me in a restaurant, I can't add up the bill. And I know it was a reckless attempt. Can I tell you how I did it? And then that might explain something. I'm not going to answer what is mathematics. I wouldn't have any idea whatsoever. Except I suppose I think it's a sort of... probing into who we are. I mean, you covered that when with your introduction.
That'd be totally wrong.
That might be totally wrong. It might exist out there. It might be something...
Is it an absolute? Is it something that's solid and unchanging?
Okay. Now, what I thought was, before I started this journey, it was a real odyssey, was that mathematics was about something that was absolute and correct. And what happened was, as someone who's totally innumerate, I had a little baby in my arms, and at that time I was being visited by a friend who was very sick, and he'd come and talk to me, not about his illness, but about mathematics, because he's a mathematician. And there was something so exotic and mysterious about what he was saying that I knew it wasn't about sums and all that stuff we hated at school. It wasn't about rules. It was about something marvellous that I had to find out about. And I didn't know how to find out about it. So, first of all, I did all the wrong things. I went to all the wrong places. First of all, I took myself off to a remedial maths class because I thought...
Why is it the wrong place?
Because mathematicians don't want to talk about mathematics. They want to do it. You see, and I wanted to talk about it. Yeah, I suppose so. Yes, yes. Or I suppose a bit like a priest wanting to carry out the functions of the church rather than a theologian.
That's a nicer metaphor.
Right, right.
They're glaring at me over there.
And while it was a wonderful class, and for the first time in my life I realised what a square root was, because we did all these things with boxes from the supermarket. It was marvellous. I still wasn't any nearer what I wanted to find out. So the only thing I had left was to sit in libraries for hours and hours and months, which I did. And I'm not terribly good with intellectual matter. I mean, I read a serious book and I see an art gallery, so I'd be reading about some equation and I'd be scribbling down a description of a woman in a bathtub, and I can't tell you why that connected, but it just does. But I kept on trying to find out what mathematics is. That's why I'm going on this long story. And it moved me terribly because I suppose I thought always that when people say there's nothing absolute, nothing concrete, we can't believe in anything, there's nothing real, this desk here is not real, I think secretly, but there's mathematics.
Well, that's what we're all led to believe, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. And when
I see Paul Davies doing those sort of mysterious calligraphic equations on a blackboard, I have to believe that that's something real as well.
Well, that's right. And when my friend convinced me that it isn't real, I thought, well, there's numbers. We can hang on to numbers. If there's nothing else, there's numbers. And then I began to question that and realise that this is a very ancient questioning, which is no longer fashionable, but I think it's fascinating whether numbers actually really exist out there in some other sphere, or whether
They're a cultural artefact.
Artefact. I mean, you could consider that they are, because there are some societies that only count up to two. And if there's any more than two, that's just many. And it gets you into thinking, well, if it's not actually out there, why do we do it? And why are some of us able to do it so marvelously? I mean, Paul Davies...
Well, idiot savants too, who can perform at very high levels of mathematical skill and who can't do their trousers up.
Well, they're brilliant at calculations. They're brilliant at, say, working out prime numbers, and how they do it, nobody knows. But why have we got this? As Paul Davies asked, why have we got this coded into the gene pool? Does it mean that we were made for something other than mere survival? I mean, you don't really need that sort of mathematics to survive. You need to be able to say that, say, one pool is deeper than another so that you can live by the deeper pool and you'll run out of water in a more distant time. But you don't really need to know what prime numbers are.
I don't know what a prime number is.
Well, I had to find this out, you see. This was a big problem. I didn't dare talk to a mathematician for 6 out of my 7 years because I was scared that as soon as I did, someone would say, like a maths mistress at school, do you know what a prime number is? And would you believe that as soon as I went to my first maths conference, quivering, someone actually said that? They said, of course you know what a prime number is, but I boned up on it by then.
Oh, look, one of the smarty producers has typed up on the screen, prime number only divisible by itself and one. I don't even know what that means. That's no help. You think that's helpful?
There's an explanation.
It's humiliating.
No, you're all right, because there's an explanation in the book. See, the whole story...
Oh, the book's full of the most tantalising little glimpses into the unfathomable.
Well, they were my glimpses, you see, because... The whole story of the famous mathematician Frances Montrose is told by her daughter, who's also innumerate. And the daughter is called Hypatia, after the great Greek mathematician, and it turns out that she can't even add up. But at the end of her life, she wants to tell her mum's story, maybe a bit to get on the coattails of her mother's fame. And so she tells us as much mathematics as she knows, which is sort of like my mathematics and probably like yours. So she does explain what a prime number is, but she gets bored in the explanation, so she gives it up at one stage, just like probably we would.
You retell a very interesting story about an amateur Indian mathematician who sent a pile of papers to a mathematician at Oxford or Cambridge.
Mm.
Can you just run that past us?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of stories about Ramanujan, who we're talking about. In 1913, he sent out letters to 3 mathematicians with an amazing new discovery in mathematics. Now, he was an outsider to mathematics. He wasn't a street sweeper, as people like to represent. In fact, he was of the educated class. Apparently, he had great difficulty with his education. His parents had to hire policemen to get him to school, or he wouldn't go there. But he was fascinated with mathematics, and he'd spent his time... He wasn't really employable, because he spent his time sitting out on his porch and doing mathematics on his little blackboard. And eventually, someone talked him into sending his mathematics to these 3 eminent professors. 2 of them never opened his letters, and 1 of them discovered him, and that was Hardy, who was a very important mathematician in England at the time. And they came on a day when he was playing tennis, and he played tennis very well that day, and I suggest in the book that that was one of the reasons why he was in such a good mood. He opened the letter, but when he opened the letter, he realised that he was rummaging through the mind of a genius, and he said, these are works of the imagination.
And as you say in the book, before midnight, he wrote that although he hadn't plumbed their depths, they must be true, because no one would have had the imagination to invent them.
Isn't that wonderful?
Well, it's a marvellous anecdote, but it gives you that little sort of frisson of anxiety in my case, because it means that we are dealing with art as much as with science. Yes?
Yes, I think so. I mean, how would I know? But I would like to argue that mathematics in this century has been hijacked by the technophiles. I like to think, perhaps this is just nostalgia, that in earlier times it was not quite so. I mean, there were gentlemen mathematicians, usually gentlemen because ladies weren't educated in mathematics, but people seemed to get a lot of pleasure from it. And Fermat was a gentleman scholar, just a feral scholar who was very interested in mathematics, for example. And the competition I mention in the book that happened in the 16th century Boulogne. Obviously, people were enjoying mathematics in that sort of outsider amateur way for them to go into.
Was there a pagan mathematics? Where does numerology, the pseudoscience, fit into the stream?
Oh, yes, I think so, very early on. I mean, Pythagoras seemed to have been very influenced by that. And Pythagoras, the square on the hypotenuse, etc. His
it's a lovely place. I visit there often whenever I go to Greece.
Well, yes. Well, he was dipping into that pagan mathematics. And Pythagoras was very important because what happened was, I think this is a wonderful story, his followers were so enamoured with the idea that everything was divisible that when somebody came up with the square root of 2 and nobody could figure out what that was, the person who came up with it, they took out to sea and drowned.
They topped him, didn't they?
That's
or bottomed
right.
him, actually. Well, to be accurate, yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So that's how fearsome a revolution in mathematics could be.
There's a story here which I think is a part of the fiction, where a mathematician is suing another mathematician for libel.
Yes.
That's fictional.
That's fiction,
that's
yes.
the trouble with this book. You never quite know. It's slippery in that sense, isn't it?
It is slippery.
It
well,
slides.
Hypatia
yes.
is not quite sure. She's a very unreliable narrator, as you realise, and she slides between them, truth and fiction. But that's all right. So does life.
There are times when your mathematics have something of an erotic charge.
Well, I suspect that mathematics does. If you loved mathematics as a sculptor loves his or her clay, you'd find it had an erotic charge.
Is there any particular formula, any dirty formula you'd like to share with us?
Yes, yes. I think the really erotic thing is a very simple thing. I have to tell you once again that I know nothing. But
look, whenever a guest comes on and says, I know nothing, listener, beware.
No, it's
that's
true.
Sort of self-effacement.
You're going to get calls from angry mathematicians everywhere who are listening to this, but I think it's really erotic that half plus a quarter plus an eighth plus a sixteenth plus a 32 plus a 64th never gets to one. I mean, that's beautiful.
I love it when you talk dirty. Yes, it is. It's poignant, isn't it?
Yes.
Because a mathematician's reach should be beyond his grasp or something.
Leans towards infinity.
Yeah, yeah. Do you use mathematics metaphorically in the book?
Yes. For example, now, this is not my line. It came from a writer of the history of mathematics called Maurice Klein. He did a history of mathematics that really is a history of uncertainty. And he pointed out that the Archimedes principle, which has gone from me completely at the moment, but, the bathtub and the water gets...
Eureka and all
yes,
that stuff,
yes, yeah. The bath gets deeper as you sit in it. And if you put more people in it, it gets deeper still. He said... Really, what this was about, that we float despite the forces that would submerge us. And I find that extremely poetic. And there's a quotation that the book starts with from a mathematician, Frege. And he said that the line is there between two points before we draw it. Now, I find that amazingly erotic.
Well, I looked at that for a while because clearly it's important to you. And being a sort of an idiot savant without numeric abilities, I thought that was pretty simple.
Tell me what you think it means.
Well, one can conceive of this line between the dots before you inscribe it.
But it could be in any shape, couldn't it? I mean, it could be curved, or it could be straight, or it could be...
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Of course it could. Of
yes.
course it could. The thing, when I wandered off into the desert recently with Paul Davies and we did it, we chatted about matters quantum mechanical and drift into the theological. I realised that, of course, these days the mathematicians are the high priests. If anyone belonged to, if anyone has an esoteric language, if anyone is sort of charged with significance, it is the person, usually the man, which is interesting, isn't it, who writes these mystical equations on blackboards. Now, E equals MC squared, of course, resonates. I mean, it dominates our century. Very few of us know what the hell it means, but
no.
We know it's important.
What does C stand for?
But isn't it? But these rather arrogant people, these full of hubris, think that they're going to actually put an equation up there soon, which will explain everything.
Yes, I find this fascinating. Well, they may do. I mean, it won't explain a whole lot of things, but I think behind this is the idea that it's reductive to put such an equation together. But I don't think it is. I think an equation like that is not a reduction, but a compression, the way that poetry is. Like, for example, the one I just pointed out before, half plus a quarter, etc. That's got a lot of compression into it. That seems to me to symbolise a lot of stuff that we live through. That sort of yearning, that sort of reaching out, and one containing it and not containing it.
When you started your search, you had a feeling or a suspicion that you were dealing with something solid. You end your search realising that this is a transcendental world, mysterious and unknowable.
Mm.
Now, this is something that few scientists are saying, that beneath the rationality of science, there's which depends on mathematics, there's something big and mystical, perhaps irrational.
Well, yes, this is a fascinating thing. I mean, we're all used to thinking of science as being the pursuit of rationality, but it depends on mathematics, which, when you start to question it, I mean, mathematics depends on assumptions that now are so much regarded as givens that it's now impossible to question them. I mean, for example, you can't look too closely at the very idea of proof.
Now, why can't you?
Well, a mathematician doesn't actually prove things.
I thought there were very famous proofs of theorems or speculations.
What they do is they show that something could be proved.
Really?
Yes. Isn't this a shock?
There's a suggestion that it's provable,
yes.
Not that this is it. I haven't nailed it.
No.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know
that. I love learning things.
Isn't it amazing? And what's more, it's only provable to someone who knows the field. So there, I mean, how more subjective can you get than that? I think, anyway. So we're not talking about something that's grounded in fact, as I thought. It's grounded in a belief system.
Did your mentors, and I'm particularly interested in Dr. Adrian Nelson, did they accept this proposition? Do they concur with it?
I haven't asked him about that one explicitly. I must remember that the whole book is told through the eyes of Hypatia, who's not a mathematician. But I had wonderful mentors when I finally dared to talk to someone. And I did roll past Adrian Nelson a lot of things like, could this woman possibly go to a conference and what would happen there and how would an outsider be treated, etc. I tried the story out on him in various ways and I was very, very excited. Originally, she went to uni as a sort of mature age student and did a degree and dropped out. And one day I said to him, could she just have read her mother's old books? And he said, yes, probably not the sort of books you'd pick up in second-hand shops in Sydney, but maybe in England, if you were there, you'd pick up second-hand books that would be full of dead-end mathematics. Now, what's fascinating about dead-end mathematics is that someone could come along and make them something real, which is what Einstein did. Did you know that? I didn't know that before either.
I thought it was really Mrs. Einstein.
Yes.
You confirm that suspicion in
yes,
the book, don't
yes,
you?
I'm fascinated by that story that apparently he gave her a very big payout and it's never been explained why. But anyway, he picked up some mathematics which was dead-end mathematics that had been dropped from everybody's interest for decades.
Just lying there with cobwebs and dust on it.
Yes, and everyone had thought that's passé. I mean, there's a lot of... What happens in mathematics that I hadn't realised is that it sort of grows like Topsy. Somebody gets interested in something and follows it and produces a proof, with inverted commas around it, that people find fascinating. Then they go in another direction and another direction and things get left behind all the time. And it depends on somebody coming along and saying, that's really interesting, for that branch to come alive again.
I steamed open some of your letters and I got one that you wrote to John Cody at Random House where you're trying to sort of summarise the mathematical ideas behind the book. So is mathematics a science or a religion? The whole structure of mathematics is full of loose ends, assumptions, contradictions, gaps. It's a wild, labyrinthine cathedral designed by a madman whose ideas and architecture occasionally come good. I thought that was good. I like that.
Well, it seemed... I mean, it's very irreverent, isn't it? But I think it may be true. The amazing thing is that it works. It's just astonishing that it works. And so then you have to ask, is it a coincidence that mathematics fits with the physical world?
It's like the anthropomorphic principle coming in there a bit.
And if we had another sort of cathedral, If there was another way of thinking, for example, we think in terms of true and false. We think in terms
guilty
of...
guilty or innocent. That's yes, sort of binary that's right. Things.
Now, there's an ancient Indian philosophy way of thinking that has seven possibilities.
I love that. That's in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. And if we had that, if we'd followed that, we might have had a different mathematics. And if we'd had a different mathematics, would that have changed the way that we see the world? Would it have changed what we do? Would it have changed whether we can travel in space? Goodness knows.
I was talking about the biodiversity problem with language, the way 15,000 languages are vanishing one by one very fast, and it's estimated we'll have a mere 600 by the middle of the next century. Is mathematics one language or many? Is there one math? You talk about the cathedral, or is there also a mosque mass, a math? Is there a synagogue math? Is there, in other words, are there other constructions, however mad?
Yes. Yes,
that
I
are
think
around.
There are. There are around. This is, I mean, when a group of mathematicians from all over the world gets together, they can understand each other and they talk mathematics, and that's one mathematics. But there are mathematics of other societies. Like, for example, I've heard that the Australian Aborigines are the people who only count up to two. So you could count up to two lots of two, which is four, and then you have... many. Now, that mathematics will do them perfectly well with the...
I saw a lovely doco on a camel driver, a camel herder, somewhere in the old Soviet Union, with huge herds of camels. And he had the ability to just look at the herd and know instantly how many were in it. That's the other end of the scale, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
But that's arithmetic rather than math.
Well, yes, I suppose so. It probably depends on what a society's needs are as to what it develops.
The author of Leaning Towards Infinity, Sue Wolfe, in a chat from 1996. That's it for another classic. Stick around now for the news on Radio National. See you later.